When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. Here's Shahan Jeyaraja and Babak Hayeri.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the College Football Survivor Show. I'm Babak Hayeri with my co-host, Shahan Jeyaraja, national college football writer for CBS Sports. During the season, we look at the race for the college football playoff champion, but it's the offseason, and we love college football, so we're going to talk about college basketball. You know, we've got the tournament coming up. We figured it's a good time. This is like the tradition, I think, of a lot of podcasts, at least take a little bit of time for it, and we thought we'd kind of blend the two. We're going to take a look at the best 1-2 punch, the kind of tandem of college football head coach and college men's basketball head coach. We could do women's basketball too, but honestly, with two variables, it's already kind of a bit full. So we're going to go through and sort of draft some of the people we think would make the best sort of, again, tandem teams of coaches at the university level. So join my knowledgeable colleague in a journey through this harrowing hardwood of hoops. You know, as always, you can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show, where we have video highlights of the show, run polls, and listen to your feedback. Take a moment if you can to like, rate, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We always enjoy hearing from you. So, Shahan, I love the concept of this show, but I like you. You can put it much better than I can. What was your approach to this? And I know you actually have an article that's coming out actually today as we're recording this on the same topic.
Yeah, well, I think it's been a few years since I think somebody's really looked into this. Obviously, coaches like Nick Saban and Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams used to really be able to swing a list like this. Well, most of the best coaches in both of these sports are kind of gone now. It's almost a moment to, I guess, reevaluate in some ways what the status of both of these sports are, the status of both these programs. And I think it's an interesting question that the schools that do this best, because in a lot of ways, it's hard to do both football and basketball well, because it takes a level of university dedication, I think, that most schools just don't have the ability to do both, right? Like, we saw this, and a team that will end up on this list at some point is Kentucky. We've seen this fight, right? Mark Stoops and John Calipari both lobbying Mitch Barnhart, their athletic director, for resources. It's very difficult to do both at a high level. And then you factor in women's basketball, like you mentioned, and maybe we'll mention a few that have some great combinations at the end of all three. But I think ultimately the athletic departments that manage to do both football and men's basketball well tend to be athletic departments that do a lot of stuff in general well, that tend to be very well run. I think it's a good indicator of a great athletic director when they can get both rolling at the same time. And the other thing, too, is when you have two coaches that are both awesome, that have a chance to be there for a little while, I mean, there's really nothing better in athletic department than having those two positions filled. They're the face of the athletic department.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, as you pointed out, the more well money developed programs out there can also afford to keep those coaches to some extent, particularly when they start to get rolling and you start to have these established names. And I was thinking about it, too, because, again, with the retirements of guys like Krzyzewski et al., college basketball has always been a sport where I thought hung on to long-term coaching hires for in a way that college football feels to have not entirely abandoned. But when you're talking about guys like Kirk Ferentz and obviously Nick Saban's just retired, there weren't that many guys who had stayed at their head coaching position for quite as long. And even though I know it can be impatient now, just like every other sport, I always associated basketball with more longevity. But again, I come at this a little more naive. As I was doing my research, I'm like, did you know USC actually has a basketball team? I was unaware of this. And we even have like LeBron's kid on the team. Well, apparently we're terrible. So I guess I'm a true USC fan in that basketball is more of an amuse-bouche to the football program in many ways. But I'd love to kick this off. You know, I'd like you to go first on this. Which tandem is your number one? Because I think I have a suspicion of, there's like at least three I thought like, okay, I could see these guys being good. And I know I highly doubt this team is going to come on the list. But when we're thinking about like in the past, I have to at least say a mention to Florida, because there was that incredible run where they were winning national championships in football and basketball in the same year. That's an example of a giant program that when they get rolling, they can do both. But that is such an exception to the rule. But all that said, who's your number one draft pick?
No, I think that to start off, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, when Thad Matta and when some of those great programs at Ohio State were rolling at the same time as the football team with Jim Tressel, that was a great combination. Urban Meyer with Billy Donovan, you know, so that's kind of what we're looking for, right? The modern versions of this. With my first pick, the number one football men's basketball combination of coaches in college athletics, I went with the University of Kansas. And a couple years ago, this would have been inconceivable for Kansas to have the number one combo that includes football. But Lance Leipold has changed things in a big way there. They won 9 games last year. They made a bowl game last year for the first time in 15 years. And on the basketball side, Bill Self is an institution. He's one of the winningest coaches that's active right now in college basketball. He's still got many more years to go. He won the Big 12 16 times. He has 2 national championships. In so many ways, he is the standard of college basketball coaches right now, an easy number one overall. And when you look at Lance Leipold, success down at Wisconsin Whitewater as a Division III head coach, then moving up to Buffalo, managing to turn them into a winner, moving over to Kansas, now turning them into a winner. He is as consistent a bet as there is in college athletics right now. So with the number one spot, again, it's almost inconceivable, the Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah, I agree with that pick. And it just speaks to Lance Leipold's abilities. Because, I mean, Bill Self, that's a name that is a brand name. Kansas basketball is a brand name that even goes beyond Bill Self's incredible tenure there. But to see them finally get good at football and to retain Leipold is tremendous, and it speaks highly to the program. I completely agree with that pick. So I don't know. I'm debating about this pick, and I don't know. Mine are a little more out of order because, I think coming at this from a little more naivete, I was saying like, oh, wow, I had to relearn. I remember the Mike Bibby days at USC. I remember a totally different era of college basketball. But at the same time, and I think this depends on, I'm wondering if I'm giving program momentum here, not for basketball, but for football, and making a good hire and one that seems like it should fit. But this seems like an era where Alabama would actually be potentially part of this discussion, because you have, and I'm going to say, obviously Nick Saban, he's left, but Kalen DeBoer, excellent coach, with Jalen Milroe at call. We've talked ad nauseum about it, but I think the momentum of Alabama football should continue to a fairly close level. I mean, they are absolutely a playoff caliber team. And then Nate Oates has been able to get the Alabama basketball program. Obviously, they're a 4 seed. In the tournament this month. I mean, I think that's an example of a program that has built itself up. I mean, because again, kind of going to the discussion we had, it takes a big state university to do that. And Alabama for some era has been able to mask it a little bit because of the sheer success of Nick Saban, makes it feel bigger than it is. When you talk about like, okay, if it got into a bidding war between Alabama and Texas and Ohio State, I know who's coming in third in that kind of a battle if it really push comes to shove. But I mean, what Alabama's got going now, just as an athletic program with those two premier sports, is I think on the level. And maybe again, not as good as Kansas in basketball. And it's weird to say not good as Alabama in football, at least you know, the previous era. But I think it would be remiss not to mention them as well.
Absolutely. They're part of my top group. I didn't have them number one, but I had them in the top three. And you mentioned it. I mean, Kalen DeBoer, I feel like when we've gotten into these conversations about the best coaches in college football, he's weirdly not included as much as I expect. I see people being like, well, Steve Sarkisian's ahead of him. Well, Brian Kelly's ahead of him. And I don't really get why, Because, look, Kalen DeBoer's at a new job. We'll see how he adjusts to Alabama. It's a different kind of job than certainly Washington or Fresno State or Lord knows Sioux Falls. But I do think that you look at his results, and they've been as good as anybody. He went to a Washington program that's less advantaged than Alabama, than Texas, and has beaten Steve Sarkisian twice head-to-head with a program that shouldn't be on the level of Texas. And then he goes and plays in a national championship game. And obviously they fall short against Michigan, but I mean, to lead Washington to a national championship game for the first time ever, to win the Pac-12's first college football playoff game since 2014, like it's impressive stuff. And I think that he is in that top group of coaches. And Nate Oates, like you mentioned, he's had great success since moving from Buffalo to Alabama as well. I think that he's considered, you know, one of the top 10 or 15 coaches in college basketball, so easily part of that top group. I went a little safer with my second pick, though. I'm going with the winningest coach right now in college basketball, John Calipari, and the Kentucky Wildcats, mixing him, of course, with Mark Stoops, who has been a beacon of success and consistency at Kentucky football, which is something that you've really never been able to say ever. In fact, Mark Stoops has as many 10-win seasons as every other season in Kentucky football history combined. Now, granted, 10-win seasons in 1957 were a little bit more difficult than 10-win seasons.
Yeah, that would have been an insane season, yeah.
Yes. But you know, it's still very impressive what they've been able to do. They've had winning records in the SEC, which is not an easy thing to do, playing in a very difficult SEC East. The thing that notched them just a little below Kansas for me is the recent success hasn't been all that awesome. Kentucky basketball was a little better this year, but John Calipari hasn't made the Elite Eight since 2019. It's been a little while, and two straight losing seasons in the SEC for Mark Stoops. But you look at their long-term track records and the stability that they've had with both of these programs. I had Kentucky number two overall when I looked at my list, and I will happily take them with my second pick.
I don't think that's a bad choice at all. I think, you know, as Texas A&M fans, we're a little bit shaken, but I mean, Mark Stoops, what he did as a head coach of Kentucky really can't be understated. I mean, in a way, you could draw some comparisons to Lance Leipold in that, yeah, no, the numbers may not be the same as certain other programs, but to get that that football program to where it is, in the shadow of the basketball program, and that tension that started to come between the two coaches over what kind of school they are. Are they a basketball school, or can they also be a football school? Is exceptional. And I think they're a great choice. They were on my list. I was a little more loosey-goosey with my ranking, so I'm not quite as firm, but so far you haven't named anyone I hadn't thought of. You know, this is another, again, I can't believe I'm going to the SEC again. But in terms of another program where I've been impressed, you know, by the entire program overall, even though this season in football didn't quite hit the note that last season did, I'm going to go with Tennessee. Because with Josh Heupel, talented head coach, obviously at UCF, he was good, solid. And then to get to Tennessee, obviously the 2022 season was an impressive stop. Still did solid last season. Not awful. I mean, they finished ranked 17 in the country. And then Rick Barnes is a great head coach. They're obviously in the tournament. They're a two seed. And, you know, this is one of the few where I know enough to say, like, you can even extend it to women's basketball, where they're also they've been an excellent program, and they're in that tournament as well. So I think that's a great example of another well-resourced state university that's willing to put in the commitment and make the intelligent coaching hires that can elevate them. And one quick note, I just keep thinking, because Buffalo just came up earlier. It is funny, whoever that, I don't know, was it the same AD who kept hiring these football and basketball coaches that were good, and then they just kind of had to hand them off to another program? I mean, what is it with the university at Buffalo? I mean, they got talent there. But at the same time, it's tough because you're Mac school in Buffalo. It's not quite the same glamour. But man, the credit to that ability to eyeball talent. But Tennessee, that would be my next program on this list.
Actually, you know what's really funny? You know who that Buffalo athletic director was who hired Lance Leipold, at least? was Danny White, the Tennessee athletic director now. He was one who hired Leipold. He, I don't believe, was one who hired Oates, but obviously a really, really good athletic director who, you know, I talked to Lance Leipold a couple weeks back, and he really said Danny White deserves a lot of credit for being willing to go outside of established norms to find different types of coaches. And like you said, they've done a really good job of identifying those coaches, but Tennessee, a very good choice, I'm looking at the timeline. I think it might have been right off, but Danny White was at Buffalo through 2015. Nate Oates came in 2015. He was promoted from being an assistant. So he was on staff under at least Danny White's administration. I don't know if he was the one who necessarily made the hire, but point is, done a really good job. No, Tennessee is a very good choice. It's funny, right? These are two coaches that kind of are the opposites of each other. Rick Barnes was a known commodity. He had been the head coach at Texas for like 20 years. I think it was 17. He ended up led a team to a Final Four, consistently won, and maybe hit a bit of a ceiling at Texas, he felt like. And he's managed to break through that ceiling in a lot of ways since moving to Tennessee. They haven't had the tournament success, but they've had SEC success. And they won the league this year. They have a really good chance of going on a run in the tournament once again. And on the football side, you mentioned Josh Heupel, a hire that I wasn't all that excited about when it was made, because I kind of felt like UCF stagnated and started to regress at times under Josh Heupel. And I mean, the reality is, when those things happen, it's not necessarily an individual coach's fault, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean a lot about that coach's ability. And he's come into Tennessee, I think, built something really good. And I think that it does help both of these coaches in these programs right now that Tennessee has been really serious from the start about NIL. So I think that that's helped only maintain what they've been able to do. So
That's a great aspect. I don't think it's talked about enough because we're talking about support for the program, but really that NIL is that NIL. I sound like an old person, but that NIL aspect is something that I think I don't think really gets enough attention for that overall complete total success when sometimes we compile these lists and analyze what's setting these programs apart. Well, who you have next?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to go through, let's see, I'm weighing a couple different ones, but I think I'm going to pick what I think is a really good sort of, again, a combination of a young up-and-comer with a veteran who I think is a little undervalued right now. So I'm going to go with Oregon. With Oregon, you have Dan Lanning, of course, a really exciting young coach, somebody who I think people expect to be a star in this industry. He had interest from Alabama and decided to stay put at Oregon, which is not something that you can expect and not something that we've heard very often. And then on the basketball side, Dana Altman has to be one of the most underrated coaches in college basketball. He's made Elite Eights. He's competed for Final Fours. He's had tons and tons of NBA players. Just this year, they were bid stealers making their way into the NCAA tournament by winning the Pac-12 tournament championship. And I think his teams are just very underrated for the tenacity that they play with, and they develop players at a high level at Oregon. So between Dan Lanning as an up-and-comer and Dana Altman as somebody who's been there, done that, I think this is tremendous value with my third pick.
Yeah, that was on my list. They were absolutely one of my selections. Actually, I was going to make them my third as well, but I'll move on to my next one then. And this is where I admit, this is where I started to get a little fuzzy in terms of, well, who do I rank where? What am I valuing more than others? Am I evaluating a legacy that may not have been entirely at the team they're at now? Or am I going at someone who has promise? I'm going to go with one that is seemingly safe in one sport and more of a, am I really just looking in the past with the other coach? And that's going to be North Carolina, because obviously they've historically been exceptional at basketball, and here they are, the one seed again. So clearly there's, you know, again, the Tar Heels are an exceptional basketball school. Too bad, you know, now I wonder how well Drake May would have been if he was on that team as well, right? But Mack Brown, I mean, he's won a national championship. He obviously, that was at Texas, and obviously took a little break, came back. You know, he's got the Tar Heels to 5 consecutive bowls. North Carolina hasn't always been a program where you're looking for the same level of football success as Texas, although it is strange considering the level of success he had at Texas. So it doesn't quite feel like a Mark Stoops Kentucky, like, well, it's a tough job, you know. It feels like, as we've discussed before, you know, you had Drake May. What more did you need, man, you know, to get a little bit better than 8-5 and losing the Mayo Bowl to West Virginia? But at the same time, this is almost like if Lance Leipold had been a little bit worse, this would have felt like that pick. Well, like they're a really good basketball program and the football program has a pulse. So I think this is kind of that thing. And again, to be fair, North Carolina has more than a pulse in football. But again, this is one where I was kind of a little shaky on, and it kind of fits into that mold. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that this is a good pick. They were in my kind of top half as well. And Hubert Davis on the men's basketball side, his stock slipped a lot last year. They missed the tournament for the first time in a while, but they came back and won the ACC and are a one seed again, which is exactly what you want to see. I do agree. I think that Mack Brown is actually very undervalued as a football coach right now. You mentioned one of only three coaches in college football right now that has won an FBS national championship along with Kirby Smart and Dabo Swinney, because Jim Harbaugh's gone, Jimbo Fisher is gone, a whole lot of other guys who have won titles have left in recent years, Nick Saban. But I think even put that aside, put aside his tenure, 5 straight bowl games, like you mentioned, he's the first coach to accomplish that at North Carolina since some young up-and-comer named Mack Brown in the 1990s. And before that, it was all the way, you have to go back to Dick Crum in the mid-80s. So they have not been a program that consistently makes bowl games, and he's managed to do it. I think it's actually quite a testament to Mack Brown that he's managed to somehow make winning 8 or 9 games a year disappointing at North Carolina. He's kind of this, like, perfect thing where it's like, well, you look at all the talent and all the players that he has, he's maybe not getting the most out of it, but dang, is he getting these players. And I think that sometimes we can lose the forest for the trees and not appreciate, man, Mack Brown the past couple of years, 8 wins, 9 wins, 6 wins, still made a bowl, 8 wins, 7 wins. Like, that's dang good. They won 5 games combined in the last 2 years of the Larry Fedora era. So he's a guy who can coach a lot of good football. And then again, you mix it in with their success on the men's basketball side, and they made a national championship game under Hubert Davis. I think that this is a big year in a big tournament for him to try to truly move up the college basketball coach rankings. I think they have to have a good showing this year. But I think, yeah, I mean, you look at what he's done so far, it's all been very positive.
You know, it just got me thinking, and whenever we've had the conversation before, who would be a great spokesperson for college football if you needed a commissioner? Nick Saban has always been the default, but Mack Brown has equally got to be up there. I mean, he is a tremendous person. Everyone you ever talked to anybody, like, he's a good guy. And I mean, I've dealt with him before, and he's just an earnest individual. And I always run into him because, again, I follow the squirrely stories in college football. Like, oh, what small program is starting a football team? And like, Mack Brown advised us. Or like, you know, hey, they're having a football conference in like Kuwait because all these guys want to maybe see if they can support an international team. And like, Mack Brown was there to talk about the greatness of American college football. And I'm like, that's just awesome, you know? So I guess if he ever decides, you know, to either go back in ESPN. First of all, he would be a natural fit back in the ESPN. But I mean, yeah, Mack Brown, if you're out there, I mean, if there's a leadership person out there, you are absolutely one of them. But I apologize. You have the next selection in our draft.
No, I will just emphasize, though, you're absolutely right. I remember, you know, we had a couple of players that were Division I, Power 5 caliber when I was in high school. And Mack Brown coming to school was like the, like, oh my God moment. Yeah. Of, you know, he's just, I don't care who you're a fan of, especially if you're from the state of Texas, like, Mack Brown showing up means something. Like, he is that kind of guy. He is universally beloved. I think that probably even Sooners and Aggies would probably tell you that, man, we might not like him, but we respect him. His Q rating, his approval rating, I think is through the roof. So I agree. If we're going to have an all-powerful czar of college football, I think that Mack Brown should be high up on the list. Let's see. So with the 7th pick, I'm weighing a couple options here. I think I'm going to go with what I view as a potential high upside pick on one side, at least, and then a stability pick on the other. I'm going to go with Iowa State. And So Matt Campbell on the football side, of course, he has brought stability in a lot of ways. And some people are like, well, you know, in the COVID year, he's only won like 8 games a year, to which I say, yeah, man, he won 8 games a year at Iowa State.
That's so tremendous at Iowa State.
This is a bottom 5 power conference job. And I mean, if you're weighing all the jobs with the expectations and competition combined with the resources, I mean, this is a bottom tier job in college football, and he has managed to consistently win there. And they even had their moment where they go 4-8, and we're like, all right, well, you know, maybe this is the end of it. And they have this off-field, gambling scandal, and then he just comes right back and wins 7 games again and finishes 6-3 in the Big 12. I think they're also going to have a chance to be pretty good this upcoming year. And then you combine that with TJ Otzelberger, who is also just one of the fastest rising coaches right now in college basketball, led Iowa State to a 2 seed for the first time in more than 20 years. They won the Big 12 tournament championship this past year. And he even had a successful stint at South Dakota State before that, too. So having that track record in addition to his success over the past couple of years, I think really holds him up. So, you know, I talked to a couple of college basketball experts on my CBS team just to kind of make sure that I really had a good feel on how people viewed a few of these coaches. And everybody that I talked to was like, Otzelberger is that guy, man. He is somebody who is going to continue to rise in profile. He's still a very young coach. And ultimately, I think that he could be seen as potentially a top 10 level coach if he continues heading in this direction. So Iowa State, number 4.
I love that pick. And I'm going to go with my kind of squirrely pick in the 7th spot, one who I was like, you know what, I'm going to go for a reach because this is a perfect transition. I actually picked South Dakota State because you have Jimmy Rogers, who, okay, it's his first season, but he won a national championship 15-0, and Eric Henderson, who's the current basketball coach. They made it through. They're the 15 seed. They're in the tournament, and they're not at the caliber of Iowa State. They're not at the caliber of any of the teams we just mentioned in basketball. They are absolutely likely going to be a feeder team for potential head coaches, unless Jimmy Rogers feels like being his predecessor, who was there for many years and retired after he won a national championship. So I love these kind of I just love giving a little bit of recognition, a little bit of light on a program, because I remember there was a brief moment, gosh, like 14 years ago, where like North Dakota State made their first tournament. And that was, you know, tremendous because they had just recently jumped up to Division I. And here they are with a great football team and a great basketball team. But just to see South Dakota State, this is like the year for that program. If you are a fan of the Jackrabbits, you know, the Jacks, as they like to shorten it to, if you're out there in you know, anywhere, Sioux Falls, you know, Spearfish, all the towns out there, Pier, I've been to many of them because I live not that far away and sometimes I decide to drive. But, you know, this has got to be tremendous. This has got to be hype throughout the entire state. So I'm just going to give a little bit of light on the rising stars, the young people who coach at South Dakota State.
No, this is a great one. You know, and I do want to take a second because there's a couple of programs that I think, like, if we could rewind the clock just a little bit, would be on the list. James Madison is one. Unfortunately, Kurt Cignetti, of course, leaves. I really like Bob Chesney, but I can't necessarily put them on a list like this right away. But they, of course, are in the college basketball tournament and also have a really good football program as well. A couple of coaches also that left recently. Arizona, Tommy Lloyd, a great basketball coach. Unfortunately, Jed Fish ultimately leaves for Washington. Duke, Mike Elko was really having things rolling with John Shire on the basketball side. We'll see what Manny Diaz can do. I think that they have a chance to be pretty good. But and the other one too is that the other ones that I have to mention are like there are so many good Mountain West basketball teams right now, and so many of them very recently had good football coaches, but like not right this second.
Not at the same time. No.
San Diego State, Brian Dutcher on the basketball side. Unfortunately, you know, Brady Hoke retires and he did a pretty good job there. We'll kind of see what Sean Lewis has a chance to do heading forward. Utah State, you know, I mean, Blake Anderson had his moment. I think that moment at Utah State might be coming to a close, but Danny Sprinkle has done a really good job. It killed me when I was putting together my list for CBS Sports that I couldn't find one good one to get on the list. I really wanted to find a Mountain West program that I could slide onto the list. Unfortunately, it's just, again, finding that synergy is really hard.
Some programs where I'm like, man, they're just having an in football. I'm like, their years are too off. Like Houston, in most years, seemed like they would have been a safe bet. And prospectively, you know, a lot of hype, a lot of hope that team will turn around. Obviously, they got a great new head coach and BYU. Kalani Sitake, that's the way he is. Some years are just kind of like, what happened at BYU this year? Granted, it was the first season in the Big 12, but there were plenty of years where I figured they would do just enough where I would feel comfortable, including in my list. Wisconsin was in that boat, Nebraska ball, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, Matt Rhule seemed like he seems like he's on his normal, you know, pace that he had at Temple and at Baylor. It just seems like Nebraska is just ready to turn that corner, obviously on the recruiting trail. And then again, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, another classic.
Well, we might get to a couple of these names in just a minute.
Oh, ooh, okay.
Yeah. We don't fly past too many of them now.
And then I was like, this is how out of loop I am. I remember I was looking at the list. I'm like, what happened to Louisville basketball? That used to be like the safest. Yeah. That was like the safest bet. I that's how out of loop I am.
I would bet that in 4 weeks, let's say, Louisville will be back on this list. Whether it's Dusty May over at FAU. FAU, by the way, a team with Tom Herman on the football side and Dusty May on the basketball side. That's like a weird little deal. But I think that whether it's Dusty May or whether it's somebody else, I don't necessarily know what direction Louisville is going to go in. I think that with Jeff Braum, they have a chance to be back on this list as well. You know, to kind of run through a couple more of my honorable mentions, right? You mentioned Michigan State, Jonathan Smith coming over from Oregon State, and of course, Tom Izzo, probably the last sort of great coach who's left in college basketball of that generation. You see Coach K, Jim Boeheim, Roy Williams, all of them kind of cycle out, but Tom Izzo still around and kicking. This gets into the semantics of whether you count Bill Self. I don't think that Bill Self is of that generation necessarily, but so he's still around. They managed to just eke it in to the basketball tournament this year, their 26th year in a row in the tournament. Another one that's also of kind of that further generation, Florida State, with Mike Norvell on the early end and Leonard Hamilton as a veteran basketball coach. Again, talking to some basketball experts over at CBS Sports, had a few kind of tell me, look, this ship has kind of sailed on Florida State basketball, that they have not been able to maintain their standard over the past 2 or 3 years. But Leonard Hamilton, a really great coach. And then I think a couple more from the Big 12, TCU and Kansas State. TCU, Jamie Dixon and Sonny Dykes on the football side, also making a national championship game. And Kansas State, you know, Jerome Tang for me on the basketball side, it's just a little too early. They made an Elite Eight his first year, missed the tournament the second. Chris Klieman, everybody knows what he is. And one that, so let's go ahead and transition, actually. Let's go ahead and transition. We're going to go ahead and run through my list of the top 10. And I went through and ranked them. And I'm going to go top to bottom. Number one, I had Kansas. We mentioned them at the top. Bill Self, Lance Leipold. You can't really argue with what they bring to the table, right? Number two, Kentucky. Just the historical success of both of these coaches, I think, could not be overlooked. Number three, I had Alabama. Now, again, you have to transfer in some of the Kalen DeBoer coaching pedigree, but there are enough coaches on this list that I think you have to do that I was fine doing that. North Carolina, number four. You mentioned it. Hubert Davis, Mac Brown, kind of the age and beauty thing. There's going to be a couple of those on this list. Number five, I had Michigan State with Izzo and Jonathan Smith. Number six, Oregon. Number seven, Tennessee. I did have Houston number eight on my list. Willie Fritz coming over, obviously two great years at Tulane and some success at the lower levels as well. Georgia Southern, Sam Houston State. Number nine, I had Iowa State. And number 10 was the hardest on my list. I felt really good about my first nine. And number 10, there were so many programs that were right next to each other. And I heavily considered TCU. I heavily considered Florida State. I heavily considered Kansas State and Iowa. I really, really strongly considered Ole Miss, which is Lane Kiffin and Chris Beard. Now, look, Chris Beard, I mean the whole section would have to be off-court stuff right this second, right? And I think that, for me, that factors in a little bit. I think if you were to just talk about, actually, you know, one that I really need to mention is Auburn as well. Bruce Pearl and Hugh Freeze, similar sort of deal. You know, for me, the reason that I left Auburn off this list, because Bruce Pearl is a top 10 coach in college basketball, is it's been 9 full years since Hugh Freeze had a good season as a power conference coach, right? Like, it's just a long time, man. Like, I think that certainly has an opportunity to come in and maybe be a good coach again. And we'll see whether that happens at Auburn. We're seeing how he's recruiting. But at the same time, it's like, it's been almost a decade at this point. And, you know, you can count his really good season at Liberty. But one, it was during the COVID year that they won 10 games. And two, Jamie Chadwell came in and immediately did better than he ever did and made a New Year's Six game. So, you know, for me, I just couldn't quite put them on the list. Ole Miss, like I mentioned, Lane Kiffin, you know, again, probably also a top 10 coach in college football. Chris Beard, you know, if we're talking just on court, you know, maybe that they have a really good case for number 10. But the program I ultimately went with was Miami. And we are in a moment right now where Mario Cristobal's stock, maybe not the highest it's ever been, but it kind of does erase the fact that he won 2 conference championships and was in a 3rd conference championship game at Auburn. And he still has led FIU to their only conference championship in their program's history. And on the basketball side, you've got Jim Larrañaga, who, of course, made a Final Four with Miami, been a really good coach, a mainstay there, won ACC championships at Miami basketball, which is a crazy thing to say. And he also, by the way, was coach of the George Mason team that made a Final Four back in 2006. So, you know, I mean, there's not many coaches in all of college basketball left who have made multiple Final Fours. Jim Larrañaga is among them. And so for me, Miami ended up number 10 on my list.
Yeah, wow, 2006, was that long ago?
It was that long ago.
Boy, oh boy. You know, I have a question because Chris Beard brings up, where do you value Texas? Because again, you know, that was a really awkward transition, but Rodney Terry, at least they can say they're in the tournament right now. How do you place Texas? Because Steve Sarkisian's definitely got the football program back. And it is a program that can certainly support the two.
Yeah, I think that one piece of this is we will go back probably in a few weeks or months and really go through the top 10 coaches in college football right now. That I think is an interesting conversation to have with all the departures. But Rodney Terry, for me, just isn't moving the needle. He had a great year last year as an interim coach with a roster that he didn't fully put together. And his roster this year in a lot of ways was better. You look at bringing in Max Abmas from Oral Roberts, just a crazy, crazy shooter and scorer. And they were underwhelming in every single way this year. They did not look like a well-coached team. They did not look like a program that worked well together, that a roster that fit together all that well. And so for me, I just have a hard time viewing him as a top-end level coach right now. I think that I'd probably have him below average right this second. Now, it's his first year. It's a transition to go from being an assistant to an interim coach to now being the head coach of a program. I also know a lot of people in El Paso, and he was a head coach at UTEP before he went back and was an assistant under Chris Beard at Texas. And, you know, I think that people at UTEP are pretty okay with the fact that Joe Golding's their coach now instead of Rodney Terry. So right now, I can't have them in that conversation. Ironically, I think that you can more easily maybe have a conversation with Texas A&M, with Buzz Williams and Mike Elko, or with Oklahoma, with Porter Moser, the former Loyola Chicago coach, and Brent Venables. But I just think that Rodney Terry right now is just too unproven as a coach to get them into that conversation.
I think that's logical. And I just figured I'd throw them in there only because currently the they're still, if we're talking about averaging out the teams right now, I figure we should give them a few words. But I'm looking forward to reading the whole article. That's going to be a great thing. And I love these kinds of discussions. It's so fun to look at the entirety of the athletic program. Now, it's almost funny. You're almost tempted to throw in a few more programs, but then it just gets, it gets to be hairy out there.
Well, I will mention real quick, we mentioned women's basketball off the top too. I think that if we're including women's in this as well, I think that you have to include a program like Iowa, where you've got Kirk Ferentz and Lisa Bluter and Fran McCaffrey. You know, three coaches who I think are doing it at a high level right now. You know, you mentioned, of course, Tennessee is a historically great program from that perspective. It's funny. One that, like, the football coach is fine, but I don't know necessarily is that standard, is like South Carolina right now with Shane Beamer, Dawn Staley, and Lamont Harris. Like,
exactly.
Those two basketball coaches, that might be the best basketball coach pairing that we have right now. I mean, it's up there. If we could eliminate the men's basketball side and only
LSU.
LSU, exactly. if you could have Brian Kelly and Kim Mulkey, that might be number one on this list, maybe number two.
Easily.
Like they are two really, really good coaches. You know, a couple of years ago, we would have had like David Shaw and Tara Vanderveer over at Stanford as well. But it's been a little while, you know, since David Shaw was obviously a great coach. But, you know, there's so many good ones. And Jeff Brohm and Jeff Waltz over at Louisville, that's a good combination as well. That's hilarious. The weak link at Louisville right now is the men's basketball program. My goodness.
Yeah, I agree. When I was compiling my list, I was like going with the safe picks in my dinosaur brain of memory, and I was just like, "Wait, when did this happen?"
Well, and I'll tell you what too. If you mentioned the trio, right, the football, men's basketball, women's basketball. I'm sorry, my guy, Dave Aranda. What the hell are you doing? Like, the fact that Baylor isn't on this list is such an indictment of the football program right now. Now, again, I think that he's done some nice things to get them back on track, but they were a mainstay. Actually, I remember when I was in school in the early 2010s, right? It was like, you know, you had first Art Briles with Scott Drew and Kim Mulkey, and that was like probably the best trio in all of college athletics. Then you have Matt Rhule come through. That was, at a time, the best trio in college athletics. You know, and now you have Nikki Collin, who's done a good job for women's basketball, but I think that that Baylor probably expects a little bit more as well. And then Dave Aranda, man, you are tanking this list with Scott Drew trying to carry the way as a clear top five coach in college basketball. So I'll tell you what, again, sitting here on March 18th, Dave, if you do not have Baylor back in this top 10 next year, then you're probably not going to be coaching at Baylor anymore.
I love it. And, you know, I now think back to the old, like, much another program where I could never figure out why they never could get all three sports, or at the very least men's basketball and football, it good at the same time as UCLA. They are absolutely the ability they have. I mean, you can just, you know, everything John Wooden touched in the 70s. I mean, that run, for people who've never looked it up, I'm not going to go into it, but just Google John Wooden's coaching record and you will be freaked out. You will not even believe that someone managed to maintain that level of success over 12 seasons. And then, you know, they had Herrick, who obviously won a national champion in 94. Lavin was okay, but I was trying to think, there might have been a moment where Bob Toledo had a good season and Lavin was there, and maybe it was Terry Donahoe before Toledo. So I think, like, there were maybe a few moments UCLA got close to that. But that is, especially of sleeping giants to have the capacity to do this, it's got to be UCLA. But
as you know, obviously you're somebody who went to school at USC, you're from Southern California. Like, I feel like at some point we do have to ask, though, like, is it a sleeping giant? Like, are they going to invest? Do they care enough to? I mean, I remember a couple of years ago whenever UCLA they just fired Alford and were looking for a new coach, and they targeted Jamie Dixon from TCU. And then they were like, we can't pay his buyout. And it was like $5 million to not be able to pay a buyout of the coach at TCU. Like, are they serious about this? I don't know the answer to it.
We obviously hear
so much that they're in debt, and, you know, and facility building in Los Angeles is expensive for numerous reasons, of course. But, like, I don't know, man. To me, you gotta
and it's so funny. They're rival school work when I was growing up, but right. At the same time, I'm like, damn, UCLA, you guys should be able to pull this one off. Like, we're kind of like the rival where you're not trying. It's almost like we were talking about trash talk during the games. It's like, are you sure? Do you need help, man? You know, like, we can give you a lift. You know, we're not the basketball school. We'll never be the basketball school. But brother, you guys are UCLA. You should be able to do this. And you have a basically, you know, my goodness. And, you know, fun fact here, just since we're talking basketball, I don't know how I missed this fact, but the last team to use it's now destroyed the sports arena, the LA sports arena, as their home was UCLA basketball. I did not realize that, because when they were redoing Pauley Pavilion on campus, they went and played there, which, by the way, is next to the USC campus. Although historically, like the LA Coliseum, it had at one point hosted USC and UCLA in basketball, just like the Coliseum had in football. But that was hilarious. I did not realize that. Now, of course, it's the LAFC Bank of California Stadium on that site. But fun facts you learn here on the College Football Survivor Show.
I'll tell you another one who I feel like somebody needs to step up and be better is one of the Arizona schools needs to commit to doing both of these things well. Like, Arizona basketball, all-time great program, of course. They're sort of that, like, new tier blue blood status, I think, that you'd probably consider them. But, like, why are neither of these schools good at football consistently? And we've seen these moments where, the Rich Rod year under, at Arizona, even Jed Fish this past year, like, if Jed Fish hadn't have left, they probably would have been, you know, maybe, like, 7 on this list. I think that they would have easily have made it. But, like, I don't understand the math of why a school in Arizona can't have both these things rolling at the same time. Arizona State, to me, is one of the strange athletic departments in the country where I just feel like they don't commit to anything. Where, you know, because I think that it would be a logical and reasonable thing for them to commit to being the football program of Arizona, but they don't really do that. So they kind of half-ass football, they kind of half-ass basketball. I'll be curious to see if Kenny Dillingham can kind of change that a little bit, because I think he's a great coach and I think is exciting a lot of people. But I don't know, man. One of these Arizona schools has to come through for us.
You know, the Arizona Wildcats, for a brief moment in time, with obviously Lute Olson, who was an exceptional head coach in basketball, and I forgot who the head coach was in 98, when Arizona briefly, that was the season where, oh gosh, the Hurricane makeup game, where Miami knocked off an undefeated UCLA in the last game of the regular season because it was a makeup game, pushed everyone in every direction. That's how the first BCS title game ended up with a Florida State team that was not in the top. I think they were like 4th. But again, UCLA and Kansas State lost in back-to-back games. That would have been a good year. But the consequence was Arizona was going to go to their first Rose Bowl because UCLA was going to go to the BCS title game. And then, oh, sorry, pushed them out. But that would have been their year. But, and you know, we were just talking about UCLA and their financial problems. Arizona, unfortunately, at least for now,
they're going to be a basketball-only school for a little while.
We might need to put a pause on their future. But my goodness. Well, that was a great conversation. I encourage anyone who's listening, go read Jahan's article. It's great in CBS Sports. I want to take a second just to thank our producer, Joey Aliberti. Thank all of you for listening. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show. He's Shahan J. Raja. You can find his work on CBSSports.com and at Shahan J. Raja on X and TikTok. I'm Bob Akairi, live from Las Vegas, just for this week only. Thanks for listening, everyone.
The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line.